Jonathan Howcroft, halftime's dual international for Subway. Grab a chicken pizziola melt today.
Hello, JP.
Afternoon, Daniel.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, thank you. I'm
good.
Well.
Nice to have you.
You look like you're about to spring something on
no,
me.
No, I'm not. No, I've got a few things up my sleeve, but I'm not going to spring anything just yet.
Good.
Just yet, because we've got some work to do today, you and I.
Yes.
Because we're venturing into a realm that...
could get dangerous.
And it's often not ventured on halftime.
Yes.
But probably should be.
Perhaps. we shall find out.
In the grand scheme of things. Before we get to that, did you watch your boys last night? Did you watch your boys?
Only caught highlights.
Sports.
It's classic England,
isn't it? The world's most boring cricket team became the world's most exciting cricket team.
When it doesn't matter.
When it doesn't matter.
Yes. But it's good. It's a good sign. It's good, you know, kind of longer term perspective. It's good that they've empowered Jos Buttler, Joe Root, Adil Rashid, who's a name that I've been calling out for ages to get a game. One of the criticisms of Rashid is that he only, in inverted commas, takes tail end wickets, as if that's an issue. You've got to take 20 wickets.
They're the ones you need often.
And against Australia, it's almost the tail that's more difficult to get out than the top order. So good to see him get a run. But yeah, just more generally good to see them play with the kind of freedom that the rest of the world has been playing with for a number of months now.
The three test players in that team last night, the one-day team last night, I'm a big fan of specialist teams.
Yeah.
In the different formats of the game. And we seem to be getting towards that much more effectively than we have in the past. Like, you'd get maybe two or three guys, new guys that would come in once the test series was over and the one-day series started. Now, well, particularly what England are doing, they're getting a whole change of rotation almost.
Yeah, I think that's partly to do with how England approach the different formats, that there isn't a tradition of aggressive batsmen at the top order. You take Alistair Cook as an example, or Jonathan Trott as an example.
Oh, he's a shot maker of the finest calibre, is Alistair Cook.
And similarly, the bowlers tend to be more pitch it up, swing it, line of length, rather than having a whole mixture of deliveries that they can throw in and around, which you need in white ball cricket. So
yep.
Hopefully this will give them an opportunity to develop a bit of both, these kind of players coming through. Ben Stokes would be an example of that. But I think in Joe Root and Jos Buttler, you've got the makings of 10-year A-grade performers in all formats. Jos Buttler is special. And this Ashes will be, the Ashes coming, will be the first time that Australian fans will have seen him for a considered period of time. And I think he'll impress people.
Joe Root has become the number one man, hasn't he?
Yeah, he is now. He's in that elite bracket, I think, in both ODI and Test format.
It's a good effort for that bloke who just, at one stage, we just knew him as the bloke Warner whacked.
Yeah, well, the
he's evolved pretty quickly, hasn't he?
Well, part of it's about finding his place in the team, and this is what England are finding with Ben Stokes as well. That they when Joe Root was finding his way into the team, the gap was at opener, and then they shuffled him to the middle order, and now he's kind of settled himself around four or five, which seems to suit him. But can you imagine coming into Test cricket as a 21, 22-year-old facing Mitchell Johnson? The kind of form that he's been in the past couple of years. I mean, it's not going to do your confidence any good at all, is it?
No, probably not. Not when much more experienced campaigners are having
exactly.
The heebie-jeebies scared into them
by
Mitchell Johnson in full flight. We'll see what happens throughout that campaign. You've got, of course, your new Ashes haircut today, which is great. We're in readiness. And just before we move on, have you seen the Sky Sports?
I have.
We didn't start the fire.
It's good, isn't
video?
It?
Terrific stuff.
I have a really high cringe ratio for things like that. I'm not normally accustomed to enjoying them, but I thought they got the balance right with this one. So fair play to them.
If you haven't seen it, just Google Sky Sports Ashes video. You'll find it. It'll come up. It is brilliant. It is brilliant.
And
I think it's one of the greatest things from a TV station, from a team coverage, like the cricket coverage of Sky Sports, has done ever.
Well, it goes to show the value of someone like Bumble as well, doesn't it? Someone who doesn't take himself seriously, who you can kind of believe when he's messing around, rather than feel like, oh, this is a guy that's just been put up to it by some idiot in the marketing department.
He wants to do it.
Yeah.
He wants to be there, the main man. He wants to lead the charge. He's singing. Everyone else is talking the lyrics. He is there and he's driving and he's got the fingers pointed. He's having a good time, Bumble. I'm looking forward to this Ashes campaign, of course, as most of our cricket fans are out there in SEN land. Now, tell me, today.
Yes.
Where are we going?
Okay. So, The past couple of days, I've slipped down a little wormhole because I've been reading the book The Psychopath Test by the British writer, filmmaker, journalist John Ronson.
The Psychopath Test.
Yes.
That's the name of the book.
That's the name of the book.
Is there a list of questions?
There is. There is an official psychopath test. It's called the psychopathy. I don't know how you pronounce it. Is it psychopathy or psychopathy? The psychopathy checklist.
I'm running with psychopathy.
By a psychologist called Bob Hare, which is where the title of the book originates, which is a 20-point checklist to establish, part of a framework of establishing the potential psychopathic tendencies in an individual. Now, got to be careful not to be glib about this, this is a multifaceted process. It's not just tick boxes A, B, and C for 20 questions and you become a certified psychopath.
But well, we can have a bit of fun with it. That's what we can do.
But it's the book's fascinating because of the way John Ronson's a gonzo journalist, so he puts himself
in... Is it what?
A gonzo journalist.
What, the bloke from the Muppets? It's
not the bloke from the Muppets, no. So he's part of the story. He doesn't write from a distance about events. He puts himself in the events and takes you along with him as a character.
That's good, I like that.
It's terrific.
If you can do it, it's a tough skill.
And incredibly tough. And if anybody doesn't know him, he's similar to Louis Theroux, if you've ever come across... You might have had more chance of coming across Louis Theroux. And... It anybody who picks the book, within seconds, you will be immediately thinking, do I know any psychopaths? Are there any famous undiagnosed psychopaths? And clearly in our conversation, are there any sporting
psychopaths? That's where we're heading today. Now, when you've made an effort to get this, though, because as you hand me this book, and it's the physical edition, there's probably a digital one out there somewhere, but this is a physical edition, old school book with pages. And in the middle of it, there's a receipt from the Eastern Regional Library, Belgrave Library. And this is due back in 10 days, by the way. Don't let it be overdue. There's the receipt of, clearly you've made
it's
an effort to go in to the library with your receipt and get this book. So you must have known something about this book or wanted to get to this book. Don't just come across this one, surely.
I was aware of it. I mean, it's been out a couple of years.
Go to libraries these days?
What's that, sir?
Do people go to libraries?
Well, evidently so. it's like the Bill Hicks sketch. We've got a reader. I was just in to look around. We're expecting, my wife and I are expecting a child. So I was actually in to scope out kind of kiddie toddler.
Baby names.
Well, we need a name, that's for sure. And I just saw that on the shelf and impulse took it out because I've always wanted to read it. And I realized very quickly that it was something that I should have read ages ago.
Right. So in terms of sporting psychopaths, we're sort of playing. Yes. That's the field we're playing on today. What are the key criteria, perhaps, for
well,
the sporting psychopath?
I guess the first thing to point out would be that there is a higher than likely chance that you would be a highly successful athlete and a psychopath compared to just a normal member of the general public. And that goes with other high-performing fields. So one of the areas that's always identified is CEOs. Yeah. So you take Wall Street as an example, the movie Wall Street, and the kind of people that gravitate towards this industry, because a crucial aspect of it is a lack of empathy, a lack of human emotion, of understanding how other people might feel about things. So one of the chapters in the book is about a Fortune 500 executive who was basically hired a couple of times to sack thousands of people.
That was his job.
And the way he did it, the way he explains how he does it, there's a relish in it. There's a pleasure in how he does it, which makes me think. It makes me think of all those football chairmen, all those football club chairmen in world football who just go through managers. You know, two a season, three a season, four a season.
Okay.
And you just wonder
how much they love it.
Well, yeah.
With the pleasure they get from it.
Do you get a kick out of that, or do you just not have the same human reaction that? You know, I don't want to tell this bloke he's lost his job. I mean, that'd be terrible. What will happen to his family? You know, what might happen to the rest of his career? It just becomes, he's no good for my business. You're gone next. And that kind of aspect of not understanding how your actions impact on other people is a key indicator. Another aspect. Wait, so do we need to go to a break?
I sort of don't want to, but I need to. I'm really keen to flesh this out a bit. I'd like to find out more about this. We'll do it after the break. We'll get to a break because the music's playing. That's always a good key. And we need to because it's 21 past three. That's what we'll do. We'll get to a break. We'll come back with more and find out more about this. I'm intrigued. I might even go to a library in the next couple of days and try and... Well, do I need a card? Is there an app for this? How do I get a book out?
All you need to do is have proof of ID and you can do it all on the day.
Well, it's a chance to happen. I'm intrigued by this. The Psychopath Test is the book JP Howcroft is reading. We're finding out more about that after this. JP Howcroft with us on a Wednesday afternoon. This is his domain. He owns this and dominates it as well between 3 and 4 on a Wednesday afternoon. And we're talking sporting psychopaths at the moment. Don't know how we get to these things, but we do somehow. The Psychopath Test by John Ronson is the book that he's reading from the Belgrave Library. And this is going to be back in 10 days' time, JP. So make sure you get it back in time. Otherwise, I assume there'll be a late fee.
There will. I think it's 20 cents a day. I'd like to avoid that if I can. We were going through the checklist.
Money's tough. The checklist, yes.
The checklist of... So there's a psychologist called Bob Hare who has devised a psychopathy checklist, which is the industry standard. Now, there's more to it. There's more to the diagnosis than just that. But the areas that are relevant to sport...
I'm starting to think that I'm relevant here in this discussion. I'm starting to think you bring this up for a reason.
Good point that you raised there. Anybody who thinks while they're listening that they might be a psychopath... By definition, you're probably not a psychopath by asking yourself that question.
Right.
So take it, you know, you can breathe
out. That's a positive. So what are the checkpoints for sporting psychopathy?
Superficial charm.
You're very handsome and generous, you know that, don't you?
Very good, very good. Both of us being glib, which is nice. Indicator one.
Yes.
Grandiose sense of self-worth.
Well, there's nothing wrong with knowing how important you are in the scheme of things, and I'm very, very important.
So if you put superficial charm and a grandiose sense of self-worth together, to me, you stand a good chance of being at the top end of FIFA, don't you? Think about how the past two or three years have played out, and you see the president of FIFA stood on the podium deflecting all of the various issues
that are facing him.
Point three, pathological lying.
That's a lie. I never lie.
Four, a lack of remorse or guilt.
Not sorry about that.
Five, a lack of empathy. And
just deal with it, mate.
The lack of empathy is the interesting one for me. I think that's the key one because it fits into the physiological side. So there's the physiological breakdown that the book talks about is the relationship between the part of your brain called the amygdala and your central nervous system.
Yes.
And one of the ways that they use to try and establish whether you have that deficiency, if you like, in terms of how it relates to normal behavior, is they show crime scene photographs that would horrify a normal person.
Yes.
But they tend not to horrify psychopaths because of that relationship between their amygdala and their central nervous system.
Right.
And what's fascinating about it, and this is the bit that sucked me in, is that skillful psychopaths learn that behavior. They learn how to then compensate for that lack of innate response, and they
that's a learned behavior.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is like terrifying.
That's a bit spooky.
And he gives this brilliant example of in the 60s in Canada, what would be the natural way that you would look to have therapy about psychopathic behavior in the 60s?
Would you sit in the chair?
Massive quantities of LSD. So there's this great...
Sorry, my brain doesn't go to drugs initially.
There's this great story of how they thought they'd found this incredible breakthrough into curing psychopaths by basically giving them massive doses of LSD and having long midnight group therapy.
Yep.
Anyway, it turns out that all that did for the credible psychopaths in that experiment, it just gave them a great opportunity to learn how to pretend to be normal. So their repeat offending rates were even higher than they would have been otherwise.
Right. Because they gave themselves an out, because they learned how to be normal.
Exactly. It gave them an intense training session.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you.
Next point, failure to accept responsibility for actions.
Well, why would I? It's your fault.
And then the final one, in this context, a parasitic lifestyle.
That's not very nice.
So when you're going through all of this, when you're reading the book and when you're going through the checklist, names obviously come into your brain, don't they? And if you Google psychopathic or psychopathy or psychopath and sport, one name jumps out quicker than all of the rest. And it's and as soon as you hear it and then you follow the checklist, it's an obvious one.
Would he be a cyclist?
He would be a cyclist.
Well, he would like to ride bikes if he was allowed to.
And once you read the book and you go down the rabbit hole of learning more about it, and then you go back to the Oprah interview, to the testimony back in 2005, I think it was, when he was being interviewed by the insurance company. When you look back at the behaviour with the masseuse, the way he behaved towards his teammates and the journalists, it's just one thing after another, and you just... Yeah, I mean, it terrifies you.
Well, you're going through that checklist: superficial charm, grandiose sense of self-worth, pathological lying. Now that we know, lack of remorse or guilt, lack of empathy, failure to accept responsibility for actions, and parasitic lifestyle. I'm not sure about that, how that fits in with Lance, but the others seem to be loud and clear.
They do.
Loud and clear.
They do.
So, but is there a? You haven't finished the book yet, but I'm sure there's something on up until the point where that beautiful document is, that that receipt is, that suggests that to be, and you mentioned the CEO of the Fortune 500s, to be at that level, there's got to be something that the rest of us would see as abnormal going on in your head.
Great point. So in there's a writer called Kevin Dutton, a researcher in Oxford, who's written a book called The Wisdom of Psychopaths, What Saints, Spies and Serial Killers Can Teach Us About Success. And it's almost a checklist. The psychopath checklist can also become a success checklist. If you think of particularly...
It's a delicate balance, isn't it?
It is. And again, it just makes you wonder how many of the most successful people, and particularly in sport, have these tendencies, because they've harnessed and reinforced aspects of their character that are psychopathic because they're successful. And he uses the examples of sporting slogans. So... Nike's "Just Do It" is in the way that he explains it, essentially a psychopathic to do. Just don't think about it. Don't worry about what anybody else is doing. Just do it, because that's in your best interest.
Yep.
So, another name. There's a flakier end of the scale, which involves promiscuous sexual behaviour.
Oh, here we go. This is the good stuff.
And juvenile delinquency, poor impulse control.
Right.
All of which place with the others gave me...
Put some issues over the top.
Perhaps my favourite potential psychopath.
Potential? I mean, you're throwing the potential in there.
Diego Maradona.
Diego!
If you look at Maradona's behaviour, shooting journalists with a gun from his...
One goat.
From his mansion packed to the rafters with illicit substances, and how he flaunts all of his promiscuous behaviour. Just if you stop seeing Maradona as a bit of an oddball with personality issues and start seeing him as a psychopath, it's much more fun.
You're right into this. 26-4, JB Howcroft is with us, and he's deep into this book, The Psychopath Test. We might find out some more after this. We may not. I'm not sure you'd be surprised, JP, but we are getting a fair few suggestions, if you like, as to who might fall into your category off the SMS machine. Not too keen to go into that realm.
No,
it's not overly important to label.
But it's
too many.
It's about provoking thought, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's an intriguing discussion, to be honest with you. And I'll be getting that book at some stage and reading it when I work out where the nearest library is. Tell me, as we move on from that, before we get sued, the A-League is becoming a bit of a destination, it seems.
Well,
or is it?
Good, very good, Daniel. it's becoming a conversation. The conversation. It's still, unfortunately, at the tail end for a lot of people. But when the big players in the world are looking for their next move towards the end of their careers, the A-League is now on the table. We've seen Xavi from Barcelona choose Qatar this week. Obviously, there's a lot of people gravitating towards the MLS. Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, high profile recently. The next big name that everyone's fighting over is Italian midfielder Andrea Pirlo.
Oh, yes.
And of all of the names that have been thrown around as potential A-League recruits, he's the one that excites me the most.
How come?
Well, first thing is, he's still at the top of his game.
He played in the Champions League final on the weekend, didn't he?
Exactly.
So
So he's there's no sense of it being, okay, this guy's lost it. He's looking for a payday at the end of his career. He is looking for a payday, obviously, but he hasn't lost it. So he's compared to Alessandro Del Piero, for example, or Emil Heskey,
yep,
there isn't you're still getting a top-level player. And the way he plays, the position that he plays in, he doesn't need the same attributes that the likes of Del Piero and Heskey needed to be elite in that position. He sits in front of the defence, he strolls around, dictates play, and it's all based on his brain rather than his physique or speed or endurance.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of A-League teams play in a system which allows something like Pirlo to flourish. Melbourne City are a very good example. The way Aaron Moy plays for them, and you know how much I like Aaron Moy.
I do.
Pirlo plays a very similar role. So, well, Moy plays a role similar to Pirlo.
That's good. High praise for Aaron Moy. I know you like it. This is going over the top.
One of the great advantages of when Del Piero came is you're in, the idea was that you would be importing a significant supporter base from Italy, the Juventus connection. Pirlo has that. He's played 100 games, over 100 games for Juventus, but he also played over 200 for AC Milan before that. So there's the potential to actually get an even bigger latent football community interested in the A-League than you would have had with Del Piero. And I guess to top it all off, I just have a man crush on him.
What is it, the long hair, beard style?
The hair, the beard, the way he just kind of strolls around like he owns the place.
He looks like I've only seen photos of the man. I haven't paid too much attention to him through his career. And that's my issue, not yours, JP. I've been a bit busy. He looks like a grumpy fella. He looks grumpy to me. All the photos I've seen, he looks grumpy.
But grumpy in that kind of European intellectual way.
George Clooney style grumpy.
In the way that you just see him sat in a Parisian bar with a cognac and a gitane, reading Sartre. And that's brilliant, isn't it? He's not...
Well, I suppose when you own the world, basically what he does, you could be that way.
Well, yeah, but how many footballers do? They buy Bentleys and buy vinyl camouflage tape to make it look even more ostentatious than it is to begin with.
Yes.
This is a guy, he owns a vineyard in Tuscany. He produces, I think, something like 20,000 litres of wine a year. He's a sued. He is someone who isn't a normal run-of-the-mill footballer. And what he could bring to the competition, what rather than us just idolising an individual who happens to be a good footballer, we would be in the position, we would be exposed to someone who could bring more than just footballing ability. And for that, and Del Piero did that, don't get me wrong, I thought he did that as well. But I think there's something about Pirlo that could bring even more than what we've seen previously.
I had an interesting quote in his autobiography, mm-hmm. Which was called "I Think, Therefore I Play."
There you go. That's a good start.
Which I quite like. Yes. I quite like that. But just tell me about the world's greatest moments. Can you just give me two of the world's greatest moments, so according to our man, Andrea Pirlo?
So one of the chapters begins with the sentence, "After the wheel, the PlayStation is the best invention of all time." So this is a man with his priorities right.
Hang on a minute. Hang on a minute.
Yes.
After the wheel.
The wheel.
Number two.
Significant.
Is the PlayStation.
Yes.
The wheel is number one in my book.
Ignore all of the other technological developments in between.
Fire's going to come in there somewhere. But the wheel's pretty important in the scheme of things. And he's chucking in just behind that, the PlayStation. And you want him to be the main man in Sydney.
Yeah, I do.
So you're an odd man.
If anybody out there dislikes Andrea Pirlo, tell me why. If anybody shares my warm, masculine embrace of Pirlo, they'd get on the line and tell me that I'm right.
I've got a question for you. With notice, you'll have the break to think about it. How big a threat to these type of players coming to the A-League is the MLS? You can answer that for me after this. A bit of feedback for the Pirlo discussion. I hate him. He's perfect. I just love him because of the PlayStation thing, and he smiles as much as Mick and Elliot Goblet. Mick Malthouse and Elliot Goblet combined. Does seem a bit snarly to me, but you've just alerted me to the fact that he's got some, as you would imagine, some photos on the interweb, on that machine, that crazy Google machine. And the ones in the vineyard, top shelf. I encourage you to just Google, what's his name? Andrea Perlo, wine. Just Google that and you'll see the one I'm talking about. Funny stuff. Funny stuff. A little bit different to the average campaigner.
You can see him in the
Barossa. How's he going to go hanging in with Graham Arnold?
Yeah, it's a tough one. That is a tough one.
I'm sure that's going to work. Tell me about the MLS and the impact it could have on A-League signings like this.
Yeah, so I think the better way around would be positioning it the other way. So how much of a rival to the MLS is the A-League?
Because we can't compete though, can we, financially for these guys?
It's difficult. It is difficult. And still the prestige and the idea of living in the US. Because this decision, ultimately, for these kind of players, comes down as much to where do they want to live for a year or two at the tail end of their careers. They've probably lived in Europe for 15, 20 years. Would they rather live in LA, New York, or Sydney or Melbourne? And clearly Sydney and Melbourne and Adelaide and Brisbane and Perth and wherever else are draws, but perhaps not as much as New York and LA to the kind of people that they're trying to attract. And then obviously there's a salary issue as well. Plus the limit. So if you look at Melbourne City, for example, they could be in the hunt for Pirlo. They are the kind of club that could attract him.
Yep.
They've already got Robert Corrin as their international marquee for two seasons. He's had one, so they're locked into him unless they can find a way of breaking that contract for next season, which is a challenge. It's not as if they can just go out and recruit three or four players of that caliber, whereas the MLS has a bigger scope of being able to do that.
Brendan in Perth just Googled the photo and he's having a good time laughing at that too. Thank you, Brendan. Great to have you on board over there in the West. Let's move on a little bit for our fans out there. We've got a couple of minutes to go. The West Indies and Australian situation in the Caribbean. First test, of course, was a very much one side of the fair.
It was, but it was but only because of Adam Voges.
Correct.
Take Voges out of that test and it would have had a very different perspective at the halfway point, and just delighted for the guy. Delighted that they've honoured form and that he's
that's the best
come
thing, isn't
through.
It?
Yes,
that's a great message for everyone in the Shield.
Absolutely right. And we talked about this during the Shield season, didn't we? That the distance ahead of the competition that Fawad Ahmed and Adam Voges were in terms of performance, they have to be selected, and Voges has honoured that. And for mine, he should play in the first Ashes test. Yes. So I would put him ahead of, depending on the balance of the team, but for me, he's ahead of Sean Marsh, he's ahead of Shane Watson, Mitch Marsh, depending what they want to do with that fifth bowler. But to get runs in that circumstance, definitely he's a Guernsey.
Do you feel it's a time of change in Australian cricket for the batting order particularly? With Watson, the pressure Watson's under, Voges coming in, Chris Rogers is going to be moving out shortly, you'd think.
It feels to me like this Ashes is the end of a cycle, the next one coming. That there's been such a glut of cricket against England. We've had the World Cup. This will be the moment where you presume Brad Haddin will probably retire, Chris Rogers will probably retire. Who knows what Shane Watson, Michael Clarke are likely to do in terms of their physical fitness and what they want to do with their careers. So I think everything will be down to these next five tests, and then decisions will be made after that. But there will, my guess is, it will just be the best 11 for each given match as it happens to appear. I'm not sure there'll be that much long-term planning put into it.
What do you do if you're Darren Lehman for the second test? Do you play Fawad Ahmed?
I wouldn't. I would use it as a trial for the Ashes, for the first Ashes test. And I don't think Fawad's going to play that. I think if he was, they would play him if they struggled to take 20 wickets in Dominica, but they didn't, did they? So I reckon you'd just be thinking, okay, what's my Ashes lineup going to look like? Let's try and give these guys a run. And the key for that, for me, is Josh Hazlewood. He wouldn't have been in my top three Australian pacemen heading into that first test. I thought he was the best of the three. And I thought the job that he did, the line that he bowled, and to use a cliche that I'm sure a lot of people hate, he bowled a heavier ball.
Heavy ball.
Than I've seen him bowl in the past. And I was delighted to see that, because I considered him a bit more of a floaty English-type seamer who would pitch it up, it would drift a little bit, whereas he was actually hitting the deck and hitting the bat hard, so that bodes well for him.
He did bowl very, very well. Did Josh Hazlewood the first test, second test starts. Friday morning or Saturday morning? 1 a.m. one of those nights.
1 a.m. Friday morning. Thursday night.
Thursday night.
And if anybody wants to hear it, you can hear it online at White Line Wireless.
Of course you can.
And you can hear me on
it. Are you involved?
I'm involved.
WhiteLineWireless.com or something?
Mixlr, M-I-X-L-R.
Righto.
White Line Wireless.
Google White Line Wireless.
There's no live radio coverage of the series, but you can catch it there.